One thing we can do through this case is make the city accept responsibility and hopefully provide, you know, some compensation for him at the end.
One of the Fairbanks Four sues the city for alleged civil rights violations. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 8th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the State Gasland Corporation's communication trouble with lawmakers.
I want to see that there's a profitable project here.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Thinking about completing your college degree? Good news, you can finish it right here at the University of Alaska. Go after your dream by earning a bachelor's, master's, a certificate, or an associate degree at the University of Alaska. Flexible classes, convenient schedules, affordable choices, and outstanding faculty, the university has it all. It's your choice, your dream. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve it at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
The Alaska House Majority Coalition is calling for Democratic Representative Dean Westlake of Kiana to resign amid sexual harassment allegations. The allegations surfaced after a Wednesday report showed a former legislative staffer claimed Westlake had harassed her on two different occasions. Since then, according to the Anchorage Daily News, a total of 7 women have come forward with sexual harassment allegations against Westlake. In a release from the House majority, House Speaker Bryce Edgman said in part, quote, "It is difficult for victims to speak out, especially against elected officials in a position of power." The allegations coincide with the legislature's plans to revise their existing sexual harassment policies. One of the Fairbanks Four is suing the city and 4 Fairbanks police officers over allegations that his civil rights were violated by police during their investigation of a 1997 murder, which led to a trial and conviction of the plaintiff and 3 other defendants in 1999. Marvin Roberts claims in a suit filed Thursday in federal court in Fairbanks that the 4 officers falsely accused him and his 3 co-defendants of the murder of 15-year-old John Hartman. The suit claims the 4 officers built their case on phony evidence and that they and corrupt city officials disregarded evidence that incriminated others and instead pushed for conviction of the 4 defendants, who came to be known as the Fairbanks Four.
There's basic safeguards that the police and others involved in the system are required to follow, and you know, some of those are basic investigatory techniques that don't just focus on a single individual or a single suspect.
Michael Kramer is Roberts' attorney. He says the lawsuit also asks the judge to release Roberts from the terms of an agreement the city offered the Fairbanks Four in 2015 after another man confessed to the killing. The city offered to vacate charges against the 4, who by then had spent 18 years behind bars, but in exchange, the 4 men had to agree to withdraw their claims of prosecutorial misconduct. The agreement also required them not to sue the state, the city of Fairbanks, or any of the officers or others involved in the case.
You know, it was an inherently coercive agreement that he entered into. Although the city's going to try to hide behind it, we think that the judge will find that he was under extreme duress. That agreement was coerced, and it just can't be enforced as a matter of public policy.
Kramer says if the judge agrees, Roberts will seek damages that will enable him to recover some of the income he was unable to earn while behind bars.
He lost out on, you know, the most productive years of his life. And while he can't get those years back, one thing we can do through this case is make the city accept responsibility and hopefully provide, you know, some compensation for him at the end.
City officials declined to comment on the case today, claiming they hadn't had a chance to review the complaint. A hearing on the lawsuit has not yet been scheduled. Over the last several weeks, there have been a lot of announcements from the state's Gasline Corporation. It has spent a lot of time and $2 million marketing Alaska's mega project this year. And so far, it has signed agreements to explore the project in China, South Korea, Japan, and Vietnam. It's set to spend another $1 million on promotional handouts, trade shows, and communications. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has more on how the corporation's message has resonated with Alaskans.
Alaska's Gasline Development Corporation has a transparency problem. Depending on who you talk to, it's either being forced to give up too much information, and that hurts its chances of being competitive in the global liquefied natural gas market, or it isn't disclosing enough about what it's doing with the state's money. This came up during a corporation board of directors meeting on Thursday. Here's board member Mark Lucan.
You know, it's interesting to me that you believe, I believe, the board believes, the governor believes, the president believes that this project is real.
But in Alaska, he says people aren't believing it's real.
And the commercial effort, the regulatory effort, the engineering effort are all very important also. But we need to help Alaskans believe this project is real.
The problem with being a state corporation is that it's supposed to act like a business. And that means some things have to be secret. But it's spending the state's money. And that means some things can't be secret. Calls for transparency and more information have gotten louder since the state took over the project. Anchorage Republican Anna McKinnon chairs the Senate Finance Committee. Her committee has been asking the same questions for a long time. How much will the state's gas be worth? And after all the debt is paid off, what will be left for Alaskans?
We are not getting the information that we've requested. You certainly don't want to show your hand in the cost scenario when you're negotiating with someone. These are sensitive issues. But the Finance Committee is going to need to see those numbers.
What's left over once the owners of the gas and the project financiers take their cut? That's an important number for lawmakers. It helps them decide whether the project is a good deal for the state. But that number, the state's share of the profit, it's one of the few things that the corporation can use to make the project more competitive in a tough global market. Cutting the state's share lowers the cost to customers. And for lawmakers, this isn't an easy choice. It's unfamiliar territory for them. It's easy to see the benefit of putting state money into a highway or a school. Pumping millions of dollars into a giant, risky gas line, it just isn't as clear-cut.
I want to see that there's a profitable project here. And I need some guarantee from someone that the Finance Committee believes that this project can economically benefit the people of Alaska.
Not all lawmakers are demanding more information from the corporation, though. Anchorage Representative Garen Tarr says some of what they're asking for, it just isn't possible to know until the final contracts are drawn up.
At some point, we do have to trust that these are professionals, you know, that know how to do the day-to-day management, because really the state, you know, legislature cannot micromanage this project, right?
That's not to say that Tarr doesn't have questions for the corporation, but she's thinking about signing a confidentiality agreement to get them answered. This past Monday evening, about a dozen lawmakers gathered to hear an update from the state corporation. Most of them are on the phone, and they are tolerating a terrible connection.
Okay, I'll go on to the next page.
Pardon me for one moment. If folks could mute their lines.
2 hours in, Representative Lance Pruitt, he's a Republican from East Anchorage, asks a question.
What happened to FEED?
FEED. That's front-end engineering and design. It's basically all of the homework that has to get done before you start building a project. It's the final blueprint and every construction detail, schedule, and cost estimate. Before the state took over, this was supposed to be a 2-year process that cost more than $1 billion to get through. Meyer says now, instead of doing the engineering and design work, the corporation plans to wrap it all into the construction bid. And that didn't sit well with Pruitt. Meyer says there are pros and cons to both models, but either way, Pruitt says that change, it should have been communicated clearly.
We are the decision makers, ultimately. We're the ones that are going to commit the billions of dollars that are necessary. They've got to communicate to us.
Up to this point, all of the state corporation's agreements have been non-binding. No one else is spending money to move the project forward. And that leaves lawmakers to decide if they want to put more money into the effort. So far, many of them have said they just aren't sure the project is far enough along to justify it. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a day in the life of a bird detective.
We don't know. Unfortunately, they don't come in with name tags of, hi, I'm Sam, and I hit a car. That would be nice.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Several students have been caught allegedly selling marijuana edibles at Bethel Regional High School. The incidents took place from late September to early October. KYUK's Christine Trudeau reports.
Parents contacted the Lower Kuskokwim School District staff with suspicions that their children might be involved. Superintendent Dan Walker says LKSD then worked with them and the Bethel Police Department to investigate the drug dealing.
Marijuana oil laced gummy bears is the way it was described to me. It was investigated by Bethel Police Department and students involved were issued some discipline.
Walker cited confidentiality in saying he could not comment on the specifics, like who the individuals were and what disciplinary actions may have been taken, and neither could the Bethel Police Department. BPD said that the matter now is being taken up by the Juvenile Justice Division and the District Attorney's Office. Walker says the number of incidents this year already is pretty unprecedented.
Given our experience over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, we might have an incident here or there, but I would say at least 5 incidents that I can remember off the top of my head this year that required my level of intervention.
Walker intervenes when his authorization is needed for discipline beyond what site administrators are allowed to impose.
So, yeah, I'm a little concerned about that at this point.
LKSD safety coordinator Perry Barr, who oversees everything regarding school safety from drug and alcohol to security issues, says the laced gummy bear candies were sold at $5 a piece.
The dangerous thing about that is you don't know the potency of the THC that's in the gummy bears.
THC is the active ingredient in marijuana. Barr says high doses of it in edibles can have much more intense and long-lasting effects than a small amount. He says the issue of edibles is a new one for the district.
Since Alaska legalized marijuana, they also legalized edibles. And so marijuana or the THC is coming in many different forms. Unfortunately, some of those forms are in candy.
Barr says the district policy involves educating students and also providing treatment resources, including social workers district-wide.
One of the most important things is actually getting the children to realize how dangerous drugs and alcohol is.
I'm Christine Trudeau.
The Lower Kuskokwim School District did not comment on whether the THC was obtained through a licensed facility or made by a non-licensed individual. State highway officials say the Richardson Highway has reopened north of Valdez after several days of intense snow and an avalanche closure. At one point, it was reportedly snowing as much as 10 inches an hour in the Thompson Pass area. The avalanche on Wednesday morning put snow and debris on the highway at mile 39, and the Department of Transportation closed the highway between miles 12 and 55. The avalanche followed a mix of heavy snow and rain in the region and created a highway barrier estimated at 20 feet deep and 200 feet long. A motorist heading through the pass drove into the avalanche debris and abandoned their car there until a DOT crew was able to dig it out. The crews on Thursday worked to lessen additional avalanche hazards and removed snow from the road, but more heavy snow and rain continued to make driving difficult. The Weather Service reported 76 inches of snow fell over 5 days, including 46 inches in a 48-hour span. Heavy snowfall is nothing new for Thompson Pass, but DOT officials admit it has been a lot of work to keep up with the recent storm. Crews used the all-wheel drive plow trucks commonly seen on Alaska's highways, as well as artillery to blast potential avalanches. Thompson Pass duty station foreman Mark Hansen says they also tore through the snow with enormous snow blowers that have an impeller on the front, kind of like a rototiller driven by a 600-horsepower engine.
They move an awful lot of snow, and they're the tool, really, that you have to have them up here. You know, it just, the banks get so high that you can't use a plow truck to cast over the bank anymore.
It's common to have hundreds of inches of snow fall in Thompson Pass over the course of an entire winter. But Hansen says the rate at which the snow fell at times during the last several days was startling, even for him.
And I've seen it snow a lot. It was snowing harder than I've ever seen it snow up here. And I've worked up here 20 years.
Hansen was in the pass and spoke by phone from just outside a piece of equipment he had been driving. He says the weather has cleared a bit and that he and his crew are happy to have the highway open. He says they are looking forward to getting caught up even further on the plowing and their sleep. Alaska is likely to stay warm this month while much of the lower 48 experiences a cold snap. It's a flip-flop of the expected weather pattern that's not uncommon, especially in winter. Brian Bretschneider with our Ask a Climatologist segment says the culprit is a feature of the jet stream called a Rossby wave. He told Alaska's Energy Desk editor Annie Feit the jet stream moves around the planet from west to east, but it doesn't necessarily take the direct route.
You know, it's not like this a race car moving at the exact same trajectory. It waves up and it waves down, kind of like a river meandering. And we call these waves Rossby waves. And there's generally about five of these waves that travel around the globe. But wherever it goes up in one place, it's got to come back down somewhere else. So it's like squeezing a balloon. When you squeeze a balloon in the middle, there's a reaction. That is, it kind of bulges out on other sides of the balloon. So where these waves move northward, like what's going on now near Alaska, it's dragging lots of warm air from the subtropics. But if you do the math, the average distance between these peaks and troughs, you know, about 2,000 to 4,000 miles. Well, if you move east 2,000 to 4,000 miles, you're talking about the central part of North America. So it's the jet stream is now racing south over there, and it's pulling in cold air from the north.
And is this more likely to happen in the winter?
We definitely see this much larger magnitude in the winter. We've got larger temperature gradients between lower and higher latitudes, and that creates a stronger jet stream. It's able to move north and south a much greater area and then draw in either warm air from much farther south or cold air from much farther north.
And what about climate change? Is climate change making this phenomenon more noticeable or worse?
You have to remember that global warming, climate change, is like this background noise. So our warm spells are a little bit warmer, and our cold spells are also a little bit warmer. As the Earth warms, the temperature gradient actually decreases a little bit. So it gets warmer here at high latitudes, much warmer, and it gets somewhat warmer at the lower latitudes. So that temperature gradient is a little bit less. That means jet stream's a little bit weaker and is susceptible perhaps to greater waviness. And so it can be a little bit paradoxical that, say, in the lower 48, they can have perhaps more frequent cold outbreaks, but they would be perhaps not as intense as before, or not as long-lived as before. But we do still get warm and cold. It's just a little bit less intense than it would be in a pre-warming environment.
Brian Bretschneider is a climatologist in Anchorage. If you have a climate question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust. Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, bird saviors. In one of the most industrial stretches of Alaska is an almost secret aviary. It's a warehouse filled with loons, owls, eagles, and even the occasional falcon. The Bird Treatment and Learning Center, or Bird TLC, is a nonprofit that's something between a veterinary clinic and a zoo. And as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, it's on the cusp of moving to a dramatically different new home.
all the craziness begins.
Through a fluorescent-lit front room, beyond the bird operating ward, and past several enclosures the size of walk-in closets, Amy Killshaw stands a few inches from a peregrine falcon.
This one came from Dillingham.
Killshaw coordinates avian rehabilitation at Bird TLC. Nobody knows what exactly happened to this falcon. She's just off.
She may have had some head trauma because she's just not quite all there. She's very calm. And the falcon's normally a very neurotic and very high energy bird, so she is abnormally calm.
Animals are brought here from all around the state. And then, like bird detectives, Killshaw and a group of volunteer veterinarians have to work backwards to figure out what happened.
We don't know. Unfortunately, they don't come in with name tags of, hi, I'm Sam, and I hit a car. That would be nice.
Because of the falcon's sedate demeanor, she may not be released back into the wild.
Might just be kind of sending her to her death if we did that.
Of the birds that can't leave, many become educational resources, living here or at the homes of volunteers. Bird TLC might take a falcon like this into schools or public outreach events. Part of the small nonprofit's agenda is getting tourists and residents up close with creatures they might only ever see soaring way up in the sky. So far this year, they've taken in more than 600 birds, but their busiest season by far is the summer, when up to 20 birds will be brought in a day, filling every available spot in the 2,300 square foot space, including a few chilly outdoor enclosures that Killshaw shows off.
This is a juvenile bald eagle that came from, where did you come from? I can't remember now.
She thinks it was either Unalaska or Kodiak. With the exception of the Raptor Center in Sitka, this is one of the few entities that's capable of not only rehabilitating injured birds, but also navigating tricky state and federal protocols when it comes to animals with special protected statuses, like bald eagles. About half of all the birds taken in are eventually released. Some are big and majestic, but the majority are migratory fowl or tiny songbirds that simply hit upon misfortune, like this fist-sized pine grosbeak.
They'll often eat berries that have been fermenting, and they get drunk and they hit things.
Is that true?
Yeah, it really is true. Yes.
They're just drunk songbirds?
Yeah.
Wandering around flying into things? A small number of the accidents Bird TLC ends up treating are natural occurrences, but Killshaw and her volunteers are primarily concerned with injuries caused by humans and the worlds they've built in bird habitats.
90% of the time it's human caused, whether it's a cat attack, a dog attack, they're hitting buildings, they're hitting windows. That's why I do it, because it's not nature, it's us, it's human induced. So I think it's our duty to help these birds.
Yeah, it's really incredible to see these birds up close. They're around us all the time, we just rarely see them, right?
Guy Runko is the center's executive director. And he is, by every measure, a bird guy. Just ask him about his opinion on swans.
I think swans are big, beautiful birds, and I love it when they're out in the wild. When they come into rehab, they're incredibly hard to take care of. So I love the swan, and I love the swan out there.
Runko says the current location on King Street in the Taku Campbell area works because it's easy for people to drive to, and there's a lake nearby for releasing birds back into the wild. But right now, Bird TLC is focused on building a new facility in South Anchorage up above Potter Marsh. It'll be about twice the size of this current facility, with more space for rehabilitation as well as public engagement. The upgrade is being paid for by corporate and individual donations, as well as by revenues from birds appearing at outreach events. Runko hopes they'll be in the new facility by this time next year. For AK, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Peter Twitchell in Bethel. Twitchell was the former host of KYUK's Geezer Rock radio show, which aired its final episode on October 27th.
This is a village started by five people, and one of them was my grandfather. My mom's dad, Akachuwak, he was from Kaysunak, Nelson Island. I'm getting old, 67. My wife always tells me I'm just a young guy, you know, trying to brainwash me. I grew up across the river in the 50s with these Gasayagos. these children of the Army families and Civil Aeronautics Administration families. So I spoke a lot of English. It didn't sound right to speak Yupik. Although I heard all my life since I was a little boy, growing up in our house, listening to my grandma, my mom, her sisters, all her friends, I couldn't speak it fluently, you know. It was all jumbled up in my head. I knew the words, but I had to learn how to talk. And that only came through practice. And I got my practice speaking my language here at the radio station. I had to translate 5 minutes of news every day when I first started here. Fresh out of high school in 71 when this station opened. Just a little room with a microphone and transmitter. And that's how they started KYUK. So I got a chance to start speaking my language, although I was not really fluent, you know. But it's funny, I talked to a friend of mine, he used to manage the station here back in 1977. His name was Henry Ivanov, he's from Uniclete. But, you know, that was 22, 23 years ago, and his voice still sounds the same. But we're all aging, you know. It's a funny thing, the voice doesn't change too much.
Peter Twitchell lives in Bethel. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Zachariah Hughes, Wesley Early, and the interns at KYUK in Bethel. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Christine Trudeau in Bethel, and Casey Grove and Annie Fight in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
GCI, with complete technology solutions for organizations that keep Alaska's communities and economy thriving. GCI is your partner in possibilities. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.